In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time for us to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams of The Main Edge with us. Good Monday, Mr. Adams.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. How about you and those about you?
Oh, we're hanging in there. Doing all right.
Good.
Doing all right. It's interesting to feel like we've turned that seasonal corner. Like, it feels like you go outside and you're like, oh, right. So several months of this then.
You're not going back to shorts? Is that what you're telling us?
I'm afraid not. They managed to slide another 60-degree day in there somewhere, maybe, but I don't think that's happening for a little bit.
All right. Well, you have been a movie-watching machine since last week, so I don't know. Where do we begin this afternoon?
Yeah, you know, it's nuts. Like, it's just one of those things where a lot of the streaming services had new releases this week, and I was lucky enough to get access to a couple of screeners as well for theatrical release / VOD offerings. So honestly, man, like, it's like we're not going to get to all of them, so I suppose we could just start and have a run at it. You know what? We'll start with the one that's making, I think, the most news outside of the traditional entertainment realm. let's discuss Borat's subsequent movie film, Deliver a Prodigious Bribe to American Regime for Make Benefit Once Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. we're gonna go ahead and just call it Borat 2
okay.
From here on in. But we needed to get that the full title in because, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen works very hard on those, and you know it's important that we acknowledge that. It's always interesting to me when these sorts of kind of years later sequels pop up. The results have been mixed. We'll just leave it at that. The success rate for this sort of thing is pretty low. I feel like this is a different animal just because of the nature of the type of movie that it is. Sacha Baron Cohen, who stars, wrote the script along with a handful of others. They basically made this movie in secret or semi-secret in recent months, including during the first part of the pandemic. Like this is a movie. The turnaround time on this is very impressive. From starting filming earlier this year to streaming on Amazon Prime starting this past Friday.
Wow.
It's really remarkable. For those who are unfamiliar with Borat, it's one of Sacha Baron Cohen's characters that he created for the Ali G Show, which was a show that he had back in the early aughts. The first movie was him coming to this country in an effort to point out to us just how not great we are in a lot of respects. And it was very funny. But the problem, and I think this is an issue that's raised with this subsequent movie, America has basically started saying the quiet part out loud. And so to get that same sort of, like, there's not the same sort of, shock, surprise factor to any of it because, you know, we spent the last 4 years knowing this is exactly who we are.
Right.
One of the things that I sort of mentioned in the review is, he's not holding up a funhouse mirror anymore. Like, it's just a mirror, and we're the funhouse. Like, that's kind of where we're at right now. The plot, such as it is, Borat has been in a Kazakh prison for the past 14 years as punishment for the humiliation caused to the country by his disastrous trip to America. But he gets a second chance. He's enlisted to return to our country so that he might deliver a gift to our country's leader, said gift being Johnny the Monkey, Kazakhstan's Minister of Culture. And yes, he is an actual monkey. Due to one of the many funny scenes you might remember from the initial film, he's not allowed to come in contact with President Trump due to his pooping in the landscaping of a Trump property during the last visit. He basically dropped trow in front of Trump International in New York City. And so the bit is, we're going to give the monkey to Mike Pence. And so that's the gist. He goes home to tell his family. It turns out his neighbor has moved in and taken his family and all of his stuff. He also discovers that he has a 15-year-old daughter that he never knew. Her name is Tutar. She's played wonderfully by a young actress named Maria Bakalova, who's fantastic. She wants to go with him. He refuses. And he hops onto a freighter with a suitcase and a giant monkey crate and takes this circuitous journey to America. He winds up in the port at Galveston, where he discovers that he is he's still fairly well-known here in America, and that his daughter has stowed away in the crate so she can join her father on the adventure. And from there, it's the standard Borat stuff, where he basically encounters real-life people and engages with them, like Instagram influencers, and he goes to debutante balls. He meets up with a plastic surgeon. He winds up spending some time talking to someone who runs like one of those faith-based pregnancy support services. We go to political rallies. He hangs out with QAnon believers, like just this whole big wide range of stuff. And yes, there is the now infamous segment with Rudy Giuliani. Like, everyone's heard about it, all about it. I'm not going to be the one to tell you the specifics, but I will say my take on it is it's neither as prurient as one side would have you believe, nor as innocent as the other would have you believe. Like, it lands somewhere in the middle. Like, it's weird and off-putting, but maybe not as full-on gross as some would have you believe. But again, like, it's open to interpretation, and frankly, your mileage may vary. Look, this movie was never going to land like the original one did. The under the radar nature of the character the first time around allowed for a much wider range of sort of unfettered honesty from the film's participants. Even now, like, that character is still sort of in the cultural consciousness. So, like I said before, the element of surprise is very much diminished. But, like, it still works. Part of Sacha Baron Cohen's brilliance is his ability to sort of cultivate otherness and use that as a way to get others to lower their defenses. It's basically he uses his own sort of, like, he separates himself, and by doing so, he allows other people to let their masks slip and show us what they're really about. And again, he can't do it as easily anymore because of the familiarity. But, Bakalova is a wonderful partner in crime for this. Like, she does a wonderful job of sort of filling in the gaps that he can't because he's so recognizable. And so we still kind of get a few of those moments. And he's just so utterly fearless. Like, the movie doesn't work without the willingness of everyone involved to push things to the edge and then just keep going. And that's kind of his specialty, like a commitment to the bit at the expense of all else up to and including his own personal safety. Like, that's, it's not for everyone. And, I call it admirable. Others might call it, insane. But he just really is so comfortable there that he really remains sort of buried within the creation no matter what circumstances provide. Just like the first movie, some of the segments work better than others. But the most of it, the majority of it really clicks, giving us a lot of that sort of squirmy, cringe-inducing stuff that kind of serves as his stock and trade. So ultimately, yeah, it's an uneven movie. There's some misfires to accompany the really very funny highs, but it's far more of the latter than the former. Like, again, this movie's not for everyone, but it's tough to deny that he has a real knack for illustrating the idiosyncrasies, the ideologies, and the idiocies of the current cultural climate.
All right, so, there you go. That's the word on Borat 2. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I?
No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna set you up for movie number two.
What will we go with next? Oh, you know what? Well, let's talk about this one, because this was a really good movie, and I really enjoyed this. It's a movie called On the Rocks, and it's the latest offering from writer-director Sofia Coppola. It's streaming. It's available on Apple TV Plus. It's the reunion of Sofia Coppola with Bill Murray, who you might remember he made the leap in a lot of ways when he starred in Coppola's 2004 movie, It's completely
Lost in Translation.
Yes, Lost in Translation. Why couldn't I remember that? But yes, so it's definitely a sort of return, a reunion of sorts for the two of them. And it's this wonderful sort of story about fathers and daughters, you know, the idea of that particular relationship dynamic, which, you know, considering her own father is, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, who is an absolute, you know, legend in the same industry in which she is making her way. Like, one imagines that that relationship might be fraught in some ways. And so it's interesting to see that same type of dynamic play out in this film, while also offering a look at, you know, love and relationships and what it means to sort of feel stagnant in that kind of stuck in a certain place, while also trying to figure out how to get unstuck. It really, it's a movie that really digs into the feelings involved. It, you know, and does a great job of shifting and sharing different perspectives regarding what successful relationships mean, or if it's even possible to have a fully successful relationship. You know, it benefits greatly from the fact that it has two great talents, Bill Murray and Rashida Jones, sort of serving as the central driving force. The story goes, Rashida Jones plays Laura. She lives in New York City with her family. Her husband, Dean, played by Marlon Wayans, is an entrepreneur who's jump-starting a brand new company and having a degree of success, but that success leaves Laura to sort of shoulder the load as far as their two kids and keeping their house and all that stuff. She's a writer by trade, but she's struggling to make any sort of real progress right now. She's got a book sold, but she hasn't written it yet. She's discovering that her creative energies are sapped somewhat by her other obligations and responsibilities. She has a moment one night when Dean arrives home from a business trip, and he's behaving oddly to the extent that makes her start asking some questions. She has some suspicions about Dean's relationship with his coworkers, you know, and these suspicions are far from allayed when she's invited to an office party and actually meets some of these people. The concerns are only exacerbated when her dad turns up unexpectedly. His name is Felix. This is Bill Murray. He's a sort of a globetrotting, he's a semi-retired art dealer, as well as a notorious womanizer, who subscribes to some pretty unconventional ideas regarding male and female relations. You know, and these are the sorts of ideas that, among other things, resulted in the demise of his marriage to Laura's mother. It doesn't take long before Felix's ideas are raising more questions for Laura. And, you know, and so he throws himself into helping her determine the particulars of Dean's infidelity, because Felix has decided that it's basically a foregone conclusion that the husband is cheating. Laura has some misgivings, but he pushes forward and uses his significant charms to just basically enrapture people of all kinds from every social strata as they're wandering through New York City and beyond. Her concerns about the relationship lead her to allow him to steer her, which results in some questionable decisions and decisions that may prove to be informative in ways no one anticipates or really wants. It's a wonderful examination of relationships and how different people have those different perspectives as to what relationships mean. It's simple, but it's not unsophisticated. Like, it minimizes the excess sort of trappings. So Coppola, who, you know, again, she directed and she wrote the script, so they could focus their attentions on those central relationships. It's all about the performances with a movie like this. And Bill Murray is so, like, you know, we've all heard the stories, like his sort of folk hero reputation, the sort of urban legends about turning up and whispering, "No one will believe you," and all that stuff. And as Felix, he's pretty much that guy. It's the same dynamic. Like, it's all about the sort of playful charisma that Murray has, that sort of trickster vibe that he brings. And it's very clear, it's very obvious, and it's used to great effect. Like, there's a very Peter Pan kind of vibe, it's wonderful because it's a Peter Pan whose circumstances allowed him to never grow up. And so you have this arrested development that has colored all of his relationships, whether you're talking romantic or familial or friendship or what have you, and he plays it beautifully. And set against that, you have Rashida Jones, who has always been a remarkably talented straight man from her time on The Office and Parks and Rec, like right on up through. Like she's got a great feeling for that sort of vibe, and so she's sort of grounded, even as she, you know, as she starts to fret. She serves as a wonderful sounding board for Felix's wild ideas. And so the two of them together, they're just great. They have a wonderful chemistry together. And the rest of the performances are good. Wayans is good. Jenny Slate has a nice turn as like one of Laura's fellow school moms and whatever. But in the end, it's about the two central folks. You know, it's lovely. It's funny. It might not quite reach the level of its pedigree, but there's no shame in that because we're talking about some really like high-end stuff here. But thanks to, you know, Coppola's gifts as a filmmaker and the, again, wonderful work done by Bill Murray and Rashida Jones, like, it's a really wonderful movie-going experience.
Excellent. All right, we got time for one more, so where do you go?
One more, eh? All right, let's talk about Rebecca.
Oh, okay.
It takes a lot of, we'll call it chutzpah.
Yes, I was thinking of that word myself.
You know, it's like there are a handful of acknowledged masters in the cinematic realm that everyone sort of agrees on. And Hitchcock's one of those guys. Like, it's like no one ever has demonstrated the same sort of level of mastery of the psychological thriller. Like, even now, like 50 years after his last movie, he's the man. You know, and some would argue that his version of Rebecca, which he made in 1940, based on Daphne du Maurier's 1938 novel, it was his first American project. The thing was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, and it won Hitchcock's only Best Picture Award. So to remake not just any Hitchcock movie, but one of his best, like, no, I mean, yeah, chutzpah. So we're here. Netflix has produced this remake directed by Ben Wheatley. And look, it's a pretty solid effort. It's got a talented cast. It's got a very sumptuous sort of aesthetic. But you know, ultimately, the biggest strike against it, which is a very big one, is that it was preceded by a legitimate masterpiece. For those who are unfamiliar with the story, the years preceding World War II, a young woman played by Lily James is traveling through Europe as the companion to a wealthy older woman. The woman's name is Mrs. Van Hopper, played wonderfully by Ann Dowd, who's great. They're staying at a hotel. She crosses paths with the handsome and enigmatic Maxim de Winter, played by Armie Hammer. He's a widower whose heartbreak has been a topic of much conversation in social circles since his wife Rebecca passed away. She drowned. There's a bit of a spark between this young woman and Mr. De Winter, and before long, Max pops the question, and so there's a whirlwind romance. They get married, and the newly minted Mrs. De Winter is brought back to the family estate, the palatial manor called Manderley, and this is where she first meets Mrs. Danvers, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, who is phenomenal in this movie. Mrs. Danvers is sort of the head of household, a very imposing figure who makes very clear her mistrust of and misgivings about this new bride almost immediately. The new Mrs. De Winter is trying desperately to find ways to fit into this new world, but is constantly confronted by the looming presence of Rebecca. In the eyes of everyone, she doesn't measure up to the memory of this seemingly perfect predecessor. But as she spends more time at Manderley, she realizes that there might be more to the story. But as she's trying to deal with the fallout from all these various factions, she's not sure who she can talk to about any of this, or if anyone will believe her if she does. Now, look, Rebecca is a classic gothic thriller. Like, I mean, it's the kind of sort of unsettling, kind of sort of ghost story that allows for a lot of, like, some really wonderfully atmospheric filmmaking. And the director and the cast really do manage to evoke a lot of that tone. Like, but, you know, the truth is, tales like this are best told with a good deal of subtlety, and there's not a lot of subtlety to this incarnation of the movie. Now, like, don't get me wrong, like, it's good. I enjoyed myself. Like, the director does a great job of crafting something aesthetically interesting. Like, there are moments that are visually stunning. you know, some wonderful use of light and shadow play and all this stuff. On the look of the thing, it's a win, but the lack of nuance kind of undercuts the suspense somewhat. And so we get a movie that's less abstract and more concrete than you really hope for from something like this. Also worth noting, the performances are pretty good, are really pretty good. Lily James is wonderful. Like, she's really talented, and she has this ability to sort of wield her physical sort of delicacy as a weapon, and she really does so here, especially towards the end of the movie. She's a treat. Armie Hammer, you know, it's funny. Like, he's a great fit for a movie like this because, like, he strikes me as someone who's basically like a movie star out of time, like the sort of guy who would have been starting in movies. Like going up against like Clark Gable for parts. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He has that kind of energy to him. So he's a good fit here. Kristen Scott Thomas is just, I mean, she's always excellent, but she's fantastic here. Like, really kind of giving us the darker side of that brand of stiff upper lip attitude. Like, it's just a great turn. The rest of the ensemble is really good. Like, some great supporting turns. It's a great collection of talented performers. Everyone does well to take advantage of their appearances. So ultimately, it's a perfectly good movie. The aesthetic's great. The performances are good. It just doesn't match up to the masterpiece that preceded it. And it doesn't really put anything new on the table as far as interpretation or presentation. Like, my ultimate take on it is it's definitely worth watching. Just set your expectations. Like, don't expect Hitchcock, and you'll be fine.
Well, there you go. Alan Adams with three for us to check out, three of the half dozen that Alan watched. Read all about him in the upcoming Main Edge, and we'll talk more with you, Alan, in a couple of days right here.
Sounds good.